Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome. Good to have you all with us here in this last part of our conversation, which will take the rest of this hour, which we need to talk about this, which is the world of adjunct professors. Well, adjunct professors make up now the majority of people teaching courses at our colleges and universities. They were always fairly low paid for the work they do, different in different universities and colleges. The workload for many of those adjunct professors has been cut substantially. Universities and colleges and the state system saying they have to save money on health care and more, and people's time was cut back drastically. Many people look at adjunct professors, people with master's degrees, PhDs, as the new working poor. Other people see in some ways that may be true, but it gives me more time to create. So it is a double-edged sword, but it also has to do with where the future of our higher education system is going and the value we place on people and their work. We are joined by Mark Chalkley, who is an adjunct professor for English for speakers of another language at CCBC and also an adjunct to Baltimore City. How many colleges do you teach in, Mark?
Just those two, BCCC
BCCC and CCBC. It's a county and city. That was my mistake.
Exactly.
I just read it. And also adjunct professor at Baltimore City Community College. Mary Kambick is with us. She's adjunct in the English department at CCBC, the county system, as well. She's an adjunct in the English department at BCCC for 9 years, which means you worked with my old friend Eric Hallengren.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And we're here with Dr. Erica Blount-Danois. She's not teaching this semester, but teaches as an adjunct professor at the University of Maryland College Park. She's a journalist and author of the book Love, Peace, and Soul, Behind the Scene of America's Favorite Dance Show, Soul Train, which will be a show we'll be doing separately with her soon. Erica, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark.
And Dr. Kimberly Moffitt is with us. Kimberly Moffitt has been on the show many times, assistant professor of American Studies at UMBC. Even though she's not tenured, she spent a number of years as adjunct and lived through that world as well, and author of Blackberries and Redbones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair Body Politics in Africana Communities. And she was, as I said, an adjunct professor in her graduate school years. And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages. There are people who have written on the Facebook. I'll get to those thoughts. A couple of emails have come in. We'll get to those emails as well at steinershow@gmail.com, 410-319-8888. So let me talk a bit about, ask you all to describe how you view the world of an adjunct professor and what role that plays in the system and why we're seeing it as this kind of the new working poor, some of people struggling to survive. Mary, let me start with you.
Thank you, Mark. I think one of the things that's happened recently is that there's been a larger conversation going on, not only in this country, but other countries where the term contingent labor is now describing
contingent labor.
A really large number of the workforce, not just in academics. But the discussion has been going on for the last few years with the understanding that adjuncts who previously did not teach the majority of courses are now teaching from 50 up to 80%. Community colleges in Maryland, 80% of the faculty are adjuncts. So we are now the majority. And the conditions under which adjuncts work has always been a concern, and it's a rising concern. And you mentioned the Affordable Care Act. This is actually just the latest thing that's happened suddenly to people who realize that hours may be cut so that employers don't have to pay health care coverage. But the discussion has been going on for some time about working conditions, wages, lack of offices, the inability really to help students. And one of the slogans that we have now is our working conditions are our students' learning conditions. So we're worried about how this is impacting our students along with the people who are our colleagues.
So I'm going to explain that. What was that? Let's say that quote again.
Our working conditions are our students' learning conditions. They are the ones who are on the other end of faculty who may be in cars. There's different names for them, like people who are road scholars who are traveling from college to college, in many cases to patch a living. Not everyone is doing this for pin money. Most adjuncts now are doing this for a living, and they're not doing too well using this kind of employment for that.
And this is also how you make your living, right, Mark?
Yes, that's right. I supported myself on it for some years now. That's right.
So is it something that you feel like, I'm just curious, is it something, since you've done this, I have other friends who've done this as well, is something that is a choice, or is it something that you say, this is the work I've always wanted to do, and this is the only way I can do it?
Well, choices have a way of becoming permanent situations, and, you know, what was a choice at one time in your life may just become the path you're on.
Right.
So I think that's
that does happen. That, doesn't
that's
it?
Just, you know, you make a choice, and then with time, there you are with that choice you made. So, you know, yeah, obviously there can be different options in life, but this is what I find myself doing, and yeah, so that I would not reduce it to a choice at this point in time.
So, and let me go to Erica, and then we'll come over to Kimberly. Erica Blanc-Danois. And this again, your sense of what this world means, just on a personal level. Then I want to get into the institutional issues that are involved here, but I'm just curious to get this on a personal level for a moment. Erica?
I think I have probably a unique perspective. I taught at Morgan full-time for 6 years, and, you know, I have friends that refer to teaching as an adjunct as academic sharecropping, and I tend to agree. However, I live between two worlds, you know, the pop culture world and the academic world, and I've worked as a journalist for so long, and I freelance, and for me, being an adjunct actually gives me, you know, some semblance of freedom from serving on committees and chasing tenure and publishing academic work. And, you know, with, you know, my new book, I'm, you know, I have the freedom to be on a book tour. You know, right now I'm in California, and which is, you guys kind of caught me off guard. I was thinking this was East Coast time. So.
Well, have some more coffee, Erica.
Yes, thank you. I'm trying to pull it together. But, I mean, that does not, the fact that I'm choosing it does not change, you know, what you talked about in terms of working conditions and wages, which is key. I mean, the pay that adjuncts get is just really abysmal. It's actually, it's embarrassing. To academics, many of whom have, you know, master's degrees or PhDs. So that is definitely still an issue. But other than that, it is a choice that I've made. So I think I have probably a unique perspective.
So, and Kimberly, you've lived in both worlds. Now, people say, people who are adjuncts, the one thing that people adjuncts want is to be a full-time faculty member. I mean, that's where most people want to end up.
Yeah, and my experience was participating as an adjunct mostly while I was in graduate school. And so while I was in graduate school working on my PhD, that was, of course, the goal, that I would be a full-time professor once I finished graduate school. And the adjunct professoring while in school was clearly about helping supplement that, you know, pittance of a graduate stipend that was being given to us as graduate students. But I did also feel like there was a period of time where it felt free, to use Erica's language, that I had a degree of freedom because it did remove me from the kind of harangues of the institutional hierarchy. And you don't have to participate with some of what is happening on campus. And it allowed you to go in, teach your classes, connect with students, but then get out before all the work had to take place in terms of the institution, not in terms of your classwork, because clearly that's where the bulk of the work is done. But I also think where we are now is we've seen this a huge increase of adjuncts because of the job market and the way that things look, that in terms of the number of tenure track positions that are being offered at certainly public institutions like mine are becoming smaller and smaller. But even at private institutions, we're seeing universities choosing not to go the route necessarily of always having tenure track full-time professors in roles. And I think that then becomes a direct hit on who then are sitting in our classrooms. And as a result of that, it has increased the number of adjuncts in our classrooms.
So, I mean, because this is a world that's changed over the last 30 years in teaching. I mean, the adjunct professors, I remember in my memory, were always people who came in who have a job doing something else in that may be related to the field, and they're teaching a course that comes out of the work that they do. But now it's become the staple of colleges. This is the way people are hired. And it is – so talk about what we think has changed here. Kimberly touched on a bit on it, but what has changed?
Well, a few years ago, Dr. Schechterlin, the long-term president of Baltimore City Community College, retired. And when he retired, the Baltimore Sun did an evaluation, and they listed as one of his accomplishments converting most of the teaching, getting away from full-time teachers to adjuncts. And they were listing that as an accomplishment because that saved the state money. Baltimore City Community College, of course, is run by the state now because the city couldn't run it anymore after a certain, financial crisis of the late 80s, early 90s. In that period, the city just turned over BCCC to the state government. And so anyway, they were listing that as an accomplishment. And I remember reading that article and thinking to myself, wow, if that's something he's getting credit for as like a positive accomplishment, what does the future hold?
I think that's the key. I mean, part of the key is that in order to make universities run, universities are saying very blatantly and openly, we have to use adjuncts. We can't afford it any other way. Tuition's rising exponentially. Healthcare costs rising, and so that brings allegedly more money to the university. But then healthcare costs rising exponentially, building on campuses that are just booming all over the place, building after building, and the kind of these huge institutions that have significant budgets for the most part, the way they say they have to survive is by cutting the numbers of full-time tenured professors. That's become, you're right, that is become part of the established world.
Well, a figure that I saw, because there's a lot of research coming out from groups who are really specifically now organized around the issue of adjunct faculty, have some alarming statistics about how little of college budgets are actually going into teaching and instruction. And one of the figures is as low as 4%, which is amazing, thinking that 96% of the money is going to other things on campus, buildings, other programs. For community colleges, some of the expenses are not there, big sports teams and things that I think colleges and universities would talk about more. We're more experienced talking about the community college sort of environment where really a very large number of students are being educated. And I have to give a plug for the community colleges. I think I know at Community College of Baltimore County, the discussion of adjuncts is going to be tomorrow through the Community Book Connection, which has been really helping along and publicizing. But it was a relatively new idea that when we talked about working poor, we had traditional people on food stamps. Of course, there are adjuncts who have gotten some publicity for being on food stamps, being on some kind of medical assistance because they don't earn enough money, which is a little different view people might have of teachers. But in my own case, I had a specific example of having a long time experience supporting other workers. And 2 summers ago, I was on a picket line for the Hyatt workers through the union Unite Here. And when I realized that I was walking around on a line supporting them, and probably the people I work with were in some respects, not all respects, in worse financial shape than the people I was helping, which of course I don't regret. But it was an interesting look at what's happened very quickly to a large group of people who happen to be better educated, not that we're really more deserving of help, but that we are responsible for the students who, I have to say, most of us are very, very committed to these students. Community college students are wonderful people. I've been happier teaching them than I've ever been in anything I've done up to this point because they are so eager to learn. They're working through incredible difficulties, which many times students at private universities might not have. But most of us are there because of that strong commitment, which I think gets lost sometimes, that we're very committed to those groups of students and certainly would love to have more time to help them get advising, help. We have large numbers of veterans in community colleges. Right. We want to be of more help to them. And some of these issues are impacting how we help, and that's very hurtful, I think, to us personally.
And in addition to that, I think it's a nice connection to talk about, especially for like a university like UMBC that receives a number of community college students, that what we want are things to be successful at that level so that our students are successful when they come to us. And if the working conditions of adjunct professors are such that they're not able to do and give to the students the way that they should, then that becomes a direct impact on what's happening at the university level as well.
That's true.
And I wonder, Erica, that I was thinking about your situation and how in some ways you were describing how the world of a life of an adjunct fits into your creative lifestyle.
Yeah.
And you've written a book. The reality is also, though, it would seem that as we get older,
mm-hmm.
You never know how many of your books will take. Right?
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? And books were usually the way that you ensured your tenure. You wrote a book.
Right.
That was part of your path to tenure. That's part of what people want to see if you were a professor. You wrote books as well as taught. So but in the long run, what do you think that world of the adjunct could mean for people as you? By young professionals who are coming into the field, and what the future really portends for you and your peers.
Yeah, I mean, that's something definitely to think about. In fact, I was just reading with another author, Ricky Vincent, who's a music writer, and he has that difficulty. You know, his kids are going to college now, so, you know, he has to deal with having to pay for that. And he has, you know, he works at three different colleges in California as an adjunct, and was told that he, you know, should go back and get his PhD in order to get a full-time position. He did that and still is not able to get a full-time position. And he, you know, he's author of two different books, and he finds himself in this sort of limbo. And it used to be, you know, adjuncts were sort of relegated to people who, you know, worked in a professional field and wanted to give, you know, their level of expertise to students. But now I'm finding that people who are interested in, you know, full-time academia are also sort of being, you know, it's like outsourcing, you know, they're outsourcing talent. And so it's not just people who want to work in the professional world and want to work and want to teach, you know, whatever their level of expertise is to students. It's both. It's people who want to work in academia full-time, and it's people who want to, you know, divide their time between those two different worlds. So as far as my future, I have to think about that now. You brought that to my attention.
We're going to take a very brief break and come right back. I want you, folks, especially those of you, I'm curious what everybody thinks about this, about what this means to the future of our colleges, what this means about when people look at maybe perhaps the impoverishment of PhDs, people with master's degrees who have worked to teach our young people, teach people in universities, what happens to the future of our learning that way? Is education just changing? What should the response be? 410-319-8888. Many of you listening to the show are in that position. We want to hear your thoughts at 410-319-8888. We have a Facebook comment that we're going to read as soon as we come back, and emails coming in from adjunct faculty members. We'll read those as well. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts. We'll be right back. We go out now with another piece by Idris Muhammad, Peace of Mind, born on this day in 1939. stuck with you, Huey Lewis, and the news. This is his birthday today, so we
love Huey Lewis.
There you go.
I was a huge fan in the 80s.
See?
It's like reminiscing my teenage years all over again.
Join us here at 410-319-8888. That was the voice of Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Assistant Professor of American Studies at UMBC, author of Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair Body Politics in Africana Communities, a former adjunct professor herself. Mark Chalkley is with us, adjunct professor in English for speakers of other languages at the Community Colleges of Baltimore County, and also an adjunct at the Baltimore City Community College. Mary Kambick, an adjunct in the English department, again, at the Community Colleges of Baltimore County, as well as previously being an adjunct at the English department at Baltimore City Community College for 9 years. Dr. Erica Blount-Danois, not teaching this semester, but teaches as an adjunct professor at the University of Maryland College Park, a journalist and author of a recent book, Love, Peace, and Soul, behind the scene of America's favorite dance show, Soul Train. And you all at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow at gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages, or you can tweet us at Mark Steiner. Fran Ludman writes in. Fran writes in, I've been teaching GED classes at a community college for 12 years, earning $26 per teaching hour. I love my work, but for each hour I teach, I spend several hours of preparation, which brings my real pay down to minimum wage. The prep takes longer this year than in past years because we have no content-based textbook, so teachers need to develop their own content in all the academic subject areas until a GEDE text reflecting the Common Core standards are available. I have a master's degree, a state teaching certificate, and years of work experience, none of which is used to determine salary. One of my 16-year-old students mentioned that he works as a stock boy, earning $15 an hour. I don't begrudge his pay. Everyone deserves to earn a living wage, but it's ironic that adult education work is so hard to convince students to complete their education when our own level of education and hard work does not lead to a living wage. Adjunct pay should include compensation for prep time, graduate work, professional certifications, and prior teaching experience. And most important, adjunct teachers should help formulate the appropriate level of compensation. Your thoughts?
Well, just to speak to what she said about the irony of the stock boy's pay working out to be more than she's making counting her preparation time, I also think it's an irony that often I encounter some former students of mine and they have jobs, maybe not, you know, glamorous jobs or high-paying jobs, but they have health benefits, which pretty much no adjuncts have. So there's another irony.
I think that the healthcare issue that Mark is mentioning has really come to people's attention because of the Affordable Care Act. And at this point, over 200 colleges in the U.S. have put limits on the adjunct hours. So I think the issues of pay parity, which means that if full-time professors are paid at a certain rate and the adjunct pay is so far below that, and we most likely are doing the same preparation for the courses, the issue is not only the pay parity, but it is also the question of the health coverage, how if you're excluded from teaching a certain number of hours and excluded from health coverage, you are in a much worse position. I know that some of my colleagues have just found out in the last 2 weeks they've been dropped from some of the colleges and their teaching loads have been dropped. I mean, this is definitely happening quickly. And I think this is what has many people concerned about the future. But the other things, the other issues are that most of us are at-will employees. We can be dropped at any time for any reason from any college. No guarantees that you would be teaching the same course the next semester that in the spring semester you're teaching in the fall semester. And the fact that many times adjuncts are called upon to teach a course with no notice, mm-hmm. which really severely impacts not only the adjunct's mental health, but the students, because the preparation time is obviously has to be quick if you get a class 1 hour before it starts. Now, that happens quite frequently. I mean, I think people don't think about that. But, you know, the instructor would like to go into the room feeling he or she has a handle on the material, but it's quite difficult if the textbook has changed and you have the course that's been in your lap because someone couldn't teach it. for different reasons, has health issues. I mean, this will happen normally, but those issues, I think, of the stability and the health care and the wages are all now sort of equally important to those of us who are doing this.
No, the Howard Community College came out with a statement that was in the paper that where they said that that with the help of an outside consultant to analyze workloads of all of our part-time employees, including the adjunct credit faculty, it was estimated that it would cost the college approximately $2 million in health benefits if no workload changes were instituted. Being unable to afford the cost of this unfunded mandate, Howard County Community College began on June the 1st, 2013, limiting adjunct faculty to 22 credits per year. And other universities are saying it costs close to $17 million to pay these health care benefits. How much of this is health care benefits, or how much is this in the Affordable Care Act, or how much of this is that is just this particular part of why we are diminishing the role of adjunct professors, and just another kind of piece of that step in a direction to where universities are going?
Yeah, I think that's what it is that it's a part of a larger goal of how we are seeing education in general. And I said this during the break that, you know, higher education in our country now is not the intellectual enterprise that I think many of us around the table actually decided to join the academy and become a part of it, but it's become so much an economic enterprise now. And so many of our decisions that we're making are about the bottom line. And so the Affordable Health Care Act becomes a piece of that larger issue to suggest, oh, here's another piece of what's going to cost our institution. So what can we do to circumvent that process instead of actually looking at more innovative and creative ways to ensure that the very people who are helping the institution succeed are thriving, healthy, and their morale is high?
So since, in many ways, the adjunct professor has become the bedrock of college and university teaching, maybe not so much at UMBC.
No.
I mean, the majority.
Because there are standards. I mean, Carnegie does kind of guide many of us in terms of
what does that mean?
In terms of there's the classification system of how our universities are ranked. And there are standards that talk about what percentage you can have of adjunct professors versus those who are full-time, tenure track, or tenured professors. And if that ratio becomes out of whack or out of line with what Carnegie suggests, then it starts to raise questions about that institution and whether or not it is really committed to the intellectual enterprise. And so many universities, such as a UMBC, really work hard to kind of keep that number low in order to show not only parents, not only students, but also Carnegie and others that we are committed to that as an enterprise.
So, but you said two things here, and one thing, let me explore both one at a time. I'm going to come back to the issue of the role of adjunct professors in the large university systems that we are facing. But when you talk about intellectual enterprise, part of the issue, as we talked about during break, is that the reason universities were around for hundreds of years was the intellectual enterprise, was people learning, discovering, and then using that to go off and do whatever career they're going to have next. But the intellectual enterprise was learning many things to figure out who you were as a person, to figure out knowledge you had, and then go off to find. You didn't kind of have a business track to go work in banking. You might be a history major and end up in banking. Do you know what I'm saying?
But this is a pushback.
So this is part of the change in the education.
Absolutely.
Higher education
and
in
we can
general.
See it. We can see it happening in terms, and it's a pushback that I think has happened for a number of years where society doesn't look at education the same way and wants it to have a tangible outcome. And so we can look at all the way back to K-12 education now and see what we're doing with Common Core, as an example, right, that suggests to us that by the time our children graduate from high school, they should be either college ready or prepared for a career. So we're already using that type of language to suggest that there should be this very tangible outcome of what skill set does this student now have to do a particular job. So it's not the same intellectual enterprise of learning and exploring yourself and understanding those that are around you you and what the world has to offer for you to then go out and venture and grasp on to what it is that you'd like to achieve. It is very much focused in a way now that there are particular roles or particular tracks that you need to take in order to get X job at the end.
So, Erica, why don't you jump in here and comment on what you just heard, then we'll go back to our other two guests.
Education has increased as tuition has increased. as parents have their, their children in school, and they're hoping $60,000 a year that their kids come out with a decent-paying job. I mean, and that's not happening. As the, as tuition has increased, the job market has, plummeted. And so, these students are coming out with a, increased debt and, few options in terms of the job market. So, the intellectual, what we went to college for to kind of figure out who we were and to learn various fields is becoming less of an option as tuition increases. Why are we really here? What are we going to do when we doubt and we can't afford to live, with this debt? So I think, the tuition is an important part of where we are as well in the adjunct discussion.
Carol writes in on our Facebook page, I'm an adjunct professor and have had my hours cut due to my community college's inability to find a workaround for the quote-unquote 30 hours equals full-time healthcare mandate. The attitude that adjuncts do this for a little extra money or for love is keeping us poor and silent. Many of us teach at several schools to cobble together a living, working way more than full time, but with no benefits. Our college has purchased a totally new signage package and renamed and re-signed all the buildings on all campuses. Yet they can't find the money or benefits. I'm a sign painter too, so I know how much this stuff costs. What are the priorities, education or branding? And she said, then she wrote also saying, hate to miss the talk this morning, but conflicts with my class, ESL, by the way, is why I can't be part of the show. So, I mean, but that I think she's talking about your campus.
I dare say she is.
Sounds familiar.
So what does that say to you?
Well, go ahead, Mary.
I was going to say the striking thing about the Affordable Care Act from the information we get from groups like the Washington Service Employees who have been involved in organizing adjuncts around the country now, starting in Washington, D.C., and the new faculty majority are saying that actually there has been no decision made on adjunct hours for certain colleges. And what Kimberly said before is true about the standards in terms of full-time and adjunct work, which I don't think the community colleges are working with. But actually, it's a complicated set of federal agencies who run the Affordable Care Act right now, because we've been attending some seminars on this. And the IRS is actually one of the agencies that makes a decision about what number of hours you work. This has not happened yet. It hasn't happened for adjunct faculty, so to many of us it seems like a really premature jump to start capping adjunct working hours before the agencies in the United States in charge of this have actually made a decision. So one can safely say that it's been a little bit of a panicked reaction on the part of schools to limit before this this whole issue has really been examined, and that would be our perspective on the Affordable Care Act right now.
So, folks, Dan, join us here at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on this and where our universities and colleges should go and what our response should be. I mean, the legislative session is coming up in January. What should be a response? I mean, and what should be an organized response from adjunct professors? If, in fact, 70% of all the teachers at community colleges around the state of Maryland are adjunct, then what's the adjunct's response? Are you just such an unwieldy group you can't find a collective response?
I think the legislature in Maryland should grant us the right to belong to unions. I believe in that.
You don't have the right to be in a union?
Technically, I'm not sure that we do. I've been told in recent years that it's got to be authorized by the legislature. Well, okay, I would like to go on record. They should authorize us.
What were you about to say, Erica?
Yeah, I mean, health benefits, I think, would be a great start. I have, you know, friends that are adjuncts that are disabled. You know, I have friends that are adjuncts that, you know, and beyond health benefits, too, some kind of, like you mentioned, Mary, stability. There, you don't know, as you mentioned, what classes you're going to teach. And, you know, it may not be your level of expertise, whatever class you're given at the last minute. And then you also don't know semester to semester whether you're even going to teach. You know, most adjuncts don't teach during the summer. And I know some that actually collect unemployment, you know, during those times that they're not teaching. So some kind of level of stability and health benefits would be a great start.
Well, I think one issue, as Mark was mentioning, the whole theme of the working poor, which can include many people, personally, my best solution to a lot of these is for the working poor to organize themselves, because that is how change happens. And this is the great movements in terms of civil rights, in terms of African Americans, and also the Chicanos in the 1960s with Cesar Chavez. The idea that people have to do this together has always been important. And professionals sometimes, even though teachers, firefighters, and other people are unionized, sometimes it's foreign to people's sensitivities to think that they really have to do the same thing. And I think it's a little bit of a wake-up call to say, if you meet someone in the adjunct faculty room for 2 minutes and you don't know what that person's situation is, when you talk with people, for instance, Mark, who has no health insurance, I found out that many of my colleagues with professional jobs do not have health insurance. They're even in a married or committed relationship, people may not have the health benefits, and it's many more people than I had thought. So
and I think that
this is a wake-up call for us.
One of the things I've read that is that there are a number of adjunct faculty, I don't know the percentage, that cannot qualify for ACA, so they have to be on Medicaid because of their income. Mm. That's how low some adjunct professors' incomes are. The American Association of University Professors put this report out saying that the whole idea of the growth of adjunct professors not having a stable job, not being a stable part of an academic community, also is a threat to academic freedom because you can easily be dismissed. Now, Kimberly Moffitt can come on my show and say almost anything she wants, and they're not going to fire you because you're tenured. You have this job, right?
Makes it more difficult.
It makes it more difficult. But you two are on this program, or even Erica, could be said, well, what you said in this program we think is a problem. And by the way, we might not say that to you, but your contract's not renewed next year.
Okay.
Right? All that's very possible.
It's a possibility. One doesn't like to contemplate it.
We're not claiming that.
I'm not saying you're claiming that. I'm saying that when you look at what the AAUP put out in this report, and the other piece, the NPR reported the other day that this disparity on campuses where some professors are making $20,000 a year, others making $100,000 and $150,000 a year, that there's this huge pay equity gap inside academia as well.
Well, I think issue when I have been in public groups or at meetings, it's really difficult for people to see, especially at the community college level where we are paid less than four-year college, is a reason why many community college faculty do try to have at least one or two courses at four-year institutions that might pay more. But in my own personal example, I spent 9 years at Baltimore City Community College at a salary that never reach $2,000 a course. Mm. Now, that's pretty terrible. I mean, that's a lot of work, and including the workload, something we're concerned about. The rise of technology, schools like technology. However, people like us who are adjuncts are now expected to participate in the online platforms like Blackboard. And I've done Blackboard for a long time. It's very time consuming. Students want a lot of information, their grades, the minute they do an assignment. It would be lovely if the grade were posted electronically in 1 second, which we can't do. Professional development. Some colleges mandate that you take a certain number of courses in professional development, but provide no pay for the amount of time that you spend going, coming, or doing the work. So not only are we teaching, but there are increasing demands on what people think a university or college should do, which now to us is, more time, not spent teaching, but actually recording things. And I'm not saying we can't do it. I really am faithful to try to putting good information on Blackboard for my students, things they can access. But at the same time, it is an extra thing. And most of us are seeing every semester more demands on our time, but with no comparable change in compensation or anything else.
There was a study in Boston done by the Service Employees International Union. And I don't know how this translates to Baltimore, but I have a feeling it's not too far apart. That said, an adjunct professor must teach between 17 and 24 classes a year to afford home and utilities in Boston. An adjunct professor would need to teach up to 4 classes per year to cover the cost of groceries for a family in Boston. An adjunct professor would need to teach 3 to 4 classes to afford care for a heart attack at certain Boston hospitals. Now, I mean, that's Boston, but the reality is that I don't think we're that far different. I'm curious, Eric and then Kimberly and then over to Mark and Mary very quickly, just your thoughts on where you think this is going to go. I mean, what you see your future? What do you see the future of your colleagues, Erica, who are adjunct faculty members like you, who may not have written a book, may not have this kind of horizon you see that's relatively sunny? What do you see the future as?
Well, it's bleak. I mean, I wanted to piggyback, too, on the demands. You know, we didn't even talk about the demands in terms of the students, you know, and office hours and talking to the students. You know, I've taught for nearly 10 years now, and it's not just going in the classroom and then going home and correcting papers. It's also, if you're teaching 2 courses, you know, you're dealing with 200 students, and you have to, you know, talk to them and nurture them, and it's far beyond just coming in lecturing and leaving. So, you know, the amount of time that you put in is also not, you know, reflective of what the salary is. In terms of the future, I don't know. And if we're going in the direction of, you know, outsourcing, or as my friend refers to it, academic sharecropping, I don't know, really where we're going. I think the idea of a union is a great idea, because you can't expect the universities who, you know, their priorities may be building new buildings or whatever. You know, if they can get away with getting talent, you know, as adjuncts and paying them, you know, abysmal salaries, they'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing as a big corporation. You know, if they can get away with it, they will. So I think the idea of, you know, adjuncts creating unions and fighting against that, it's the, you know, David and Goliath kind of thing. So that's probably the only way things will change.
Yeah, I notice this happening even at the college and university level, and not just at community colleges, where adjunct faculty are starting to mobilize or organize themselves around some of their concerns and their workload and expectations, and how it relates to what they're being paid. But for me, I'm always trying to think about the students for these types of issues. And so when I think about what the future looks like, it feels like a great loss to our students in terms of great teachers, those who are there, committed, interested in being with our students, but because they can't afford to maintain a life like this, especially as universities continue to have greater and greater expectations of those adjunct faculties, I think it means that we'll end up losing a number of people who can't remain in the system and connected to our students in particular. I also think, again, coming from a perspective of being on both sides at one point or another, that a lot of what we're seeing happening in terms of expectations on adjuncts is a result of the increased expectations on tenured and tenure-track professors as well. The number of tasks that we are now tasked with that don't have a tangible dollar amount to it, but seems to be an an expectation that the university is, you know, sending down to the rest of us to say that these things also need to be done. So if they're willing to do it to their tenured and tenure track full-time professors, it's going to also trickle down to those who are part-time or even full-time adjuncts as well.
Let me just say before we run out of time completely that, part of the reason for doing this program was that, that tomorrow, November the 14th, from 9:35 to 11 a.m., at the CCBC Catonsville campus in the Health Careers and Technology Building, room 308A, there's an event taking place called Adjuncts, Do They Classify as the Working Poor? This panel discussion will feature Esther Mervais from the New Faculty Majority, Anne McClear, higher ed organizer with SEIU 500, and Charlotte Wolf, who's adjunct at CCBC and Stevenson University.
Right.
So that's taking place tomorrow. So I thank you all for being part of this discussion today. And also reminding you that that tonight at UMBC at 7 p.m., November 13th, at the University Center Ballroom, is the annual W.E.B. Du Bois Lecture. This year, the topic is W.E.B. Du Bois 50 Years After the March on Washington. And the speaker is Dr. David Levering Lewis, professor of history at New York University. The event's open to the public. You can get more information at umbc.edu/SOCS Forum. And David, of course, being a guest on the show numerous times, and he is America's leading scholar on W.E.B. Du Bois.
Yes.
So I want to thank all four of you for being here. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
It's a topic and a situation that we better deal with, and I think that one of the things we have to think about is, I just lost my papers, but I caught them midair, is that maybe adjunct faculties do need to organize in these community colleges to make their voices heard. So appreciate you all listening today. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Henry. Our engineer is Andre Melton. You can go to our webpage at steinershow.org to hear the show again, podcast our past shows. You can also now go to iTunes and download all of our podcasts. They're all there. If you go to our website, though, you can read the articles we're talking about, make contact with the folks we were on the show today to hear what they've been writing and thinking. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. By the way, what you're hearing under me right now is Lauren's dance, Idris Muhammad. Take care.